The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
All right, so we should talk about the trade deal that China has come back, because it's easy to win a $100 billion trade barrier that Trump has put up. China is responding, and it's not pretty. But I think this is more important. China is doing something else. They're clamping down even harder on religion. Remember when China seemed to be trying to show the world that, you know, oh, look, we're a hybrid system. See, you can have a bustling economy, you know, just like yours. And, you know, right alongside this friendly communist regime that, you know, just kills your children in mud puddles. But, hey, we're swell. Yeah, those days are over. Now President Xi is moving on Parliament again. He's already gotten Parliament to remove the term limits for the Constitution so he can be God again, ruler for life. He's being called the most powerful Chinese leader since Mao in China, and that's a compliment, or I should say it's a required compliment. So it's no big surprise this week when President Xi goes to the Chinese government and shuts down the online sales of the Bible. Now, why is that? What could possibly be in that book that is so dangerous to tyrants? I mean, what could it be? We don't know, because we don't read it here in America anymore. China already strictly controlled the sales of Bibles by allowing them to be printed and distributed only through official state churches. But in recent years, Bibles began popping up for sale through Chinese online outlets, including Amazon. But not anymore. By the way, the Quran is still available for purchase online. No Bibles. It's just another casualty of China's continual effort to restrict internet and religious freedom. Sarah Cook, she's a senior East Asia analyst at Freedom House, said, quote, "Religious topics and groups are among the most censored in China. We found the Chinese authorities increasingly using more high-tech methods to control religion and to punish believers, including surveillance and arrest for believers for sharing information online," end quote. A secretive department of the Chinese Communist Party called the United Front Work Department is now in charge of the government's efforts internally. They used to be just overseas influence efforts, but recently they have also taken the, quote, ethnic and religious affairs over, which means the Communist Party is moving further to tighten its stranglehold on religion. Analysts say the specific crackdown on Christianity is driven by President Xi. China's State Administration for Religious Affairs has now developed a 5-year plan. Hey, Stu, didn't Mao have a 5-year plan, too?
Yeah, a couple great ideas on that front.
Yeah. How many people thrived under that 5-year plan?
Oh, I mean, if by thrived you mean died unnecessarily, about 60 million.
Okay, but that's it. Okay, so they've got a new 5-year plan. It includes work on a new, more Chinese version of the words of Christ. So this ban on online Bible sales is just to clear the shelves for the new approved communist version of scripture coming soon to Chinese pews. 5-year plans. Mao is a fan. President Xi is a fan. Oh, you know who else? Stalin was also a fan.
It's Friday, April 6th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Boy, the world is drawing lines, and we don't seem willing to even talk about lines. All right, Peter Schweizer. He is the author of Clinton Cash. He has come out with a new book called Secret Empires, How the American Political Class Hides Corruption and Enriches Families and Friends. And welcome to the program, Peter Schweizer. How are you, Peter?
Hey, I'm great, Glenn. Great to be back on with you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So Peter, you started with Clinton Cash, and you were looking at how they were making all this money and where it was all coming from. And this is an interesting, it's not even really a departure. You went in and looked at both sides, and what did you find?
Yeah, what we found is that political elites on both sides of the aisle are engaged in massive self-enrichment, and it oftentimes includes foreign governments and foreign oligarchs because they want to pay for the access, pay for the influence. And, you know, as you were talking there about China, and you've talked about it on a regular basis, China looms large here. They basically have created this strategy, Glenn, of buying off elements of American political leadership by giving lucrative deals to their family members. And unfortunately, it appears to be working.
So give us some examples of this.
Well, I'll give you one Democrat and one Republican, Joe Biden, Vice President Joe Biden. Think of this for a second. In December of 2013, Joe Biden, as Vice President of the United States, is flying on Air Force Two to Beijing, China. Whole host of controversial issues on the table, the South China Sea, trade issues, religious freedom, human rights, North Korea. Well, with him on the plane is Hunter Biden, his son. This is not the son that tragically died. That was Bo Biden. This is Hunter Biden. So they fly over on Air Force Two. Joe Biden is there for a couple of days and really gets widely criticized on that trip for going soft on Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they leave, and Glenn, 10 days later, Hunter Biden's firm, Rosemont Seneca Partners, strikes a $1 billion, that's with a B, billion-dollar deal with the Chinese government. This is not an American company in China. This is not a Chinese quasi-state company. This is the Chinese government. And that's just the first of a series of deals that the Biden family does with the Chinese government as Vice President Joe Biden is negotiating with the Chinese government.
So how come we're not seeing this anywhere? Why is no one ringing the bell anywhere?
Well, it's a great question, Glenn. I mean, look, in a sense, I'm very, very frustrated, but I'm also very thankful. I'm frustrated that the media did not cover this at all when it happened. They're starting to cover it now. On the other hand, I'm sort of the beneficiary of it because I'm an author, and it gives me great material that the media is not covering. But this is the huge problem in what I've said is that, look, The media, you know, the punditry on Trump by some of the mainstream media, I think, has just been like over the top.
Yeah.
But the reporting, the detailed reporting of, you know, Jared's meetings with foreign bankers, that's exactly what the media should be doing. My criticism of the media is they just don't do that much to other people. They didn't do it to the Bidens. They certainly haven't done it to Mitch McConnell. And it's the selective nature of this stuff that is so frustrating that the media doesn't want to cover.
So give me, I mean, the characters on the front of your book, the prominent ones, Obama, Biden, and Mitch McConnell. Tell me, yeah. Mitch McConnell, or give me something on the Republican side.
Well, Mitch McConnell, again, it's China. You know, Mitch McConnell is married to Elaine Chao, who is the transportation secretary in the Trump administration. Very similar situation as it was with the Bidens. You go back a little bit earlier to 1993, Mitch McConnell, the senator from Kentucky, goes to Beijing with his father-in-law, Elaine Chao's father, James Chao. It's not an official congressional delegation. They are there as guests of the China State Shipbuilding Corporation, or CSSC. And as the name implies, Glenn, this, of course, is owned by the Chinese government. And in fact, it's really one of the largest defense contractors in Beijing. They're the ones building the ships that are trying to challenge U.S. naval supremacy. So they go there in 1993, and what Beijing basically says, and of course they see the lay of the land, they see that Mitch McConnell is this rising senator, they say, look, we will set you up in the shipping business. We will give the Chao family, their company Foremost Group, this great deal. We will build your ships for you. We will finance the construction of those ships. We'll provide crews for those ships, and we will provide contracts for those ships. And, you know, long story short, over the next 25 years, the family has become very, very wealthy, courtesy of the Chinese government. And James Chao, a couple of years ago, just gave a gift to Mitch McConnell of between $5 million and $25 million. So he's a direct beneficiary of this. Here's the problem, Glenn, and you probably know where this is going. Look at Mitch McConnell's record on China. After the Tiananmen Square massacre, up until 1993, he was one of the most vocal opponents of Beijing when it came to human rights, when it came to these national security issues. That has all gone away. He will say an occasional thing about, you know, China, well, gosh, we wish they were better about human rights, but it is incredibly muted. And he has worked aggressively. I count this in Secret Empires. He's worked aggressively to undermine any attempts to deal with issues related to human rights, trade issues, currency manipulation, et cetera. So it's very, very clear, I think, in both the case of Biden and McConnell, Chow, that they have A, made these political families very wealthy, and B, those political families have in effect returned the favor by going soft on Beijing. It's a strategy that is terrible, and it's working.
The name of the book is Secret Empires. I want Peter to stick around and tell you about Smash and Grab. What politicians are doing, it sounds an awful lot like what Andrew Jackson did when he went into office as the poorest president and left office as the richest president. We'll give you that coming up in just a few minutes.
Glenn Beck.
We reported on Tuesday that the Nazarene Fund is trying to help a group of persecuted Iranian Christian refugees. These people are known in the media as the Lautenberg Christians. They were waiting for their final permission to emigrate to the United States. And at the last minute, they were denied visas by the U.S. government. We don't know why, but these people are going to be shipped back to Iran, and they are open Christians. They are going to be executed if they are returned to Iran. We're trying to help them. We'll have all the details coming up in about 45 minutes from now. Back with Peter Schweitzer, who has written a book, Secret Empires, and it's all about how the political class here in America is hiding their corruption and enriching their friends and family. This strikes me, Peter, very much as what Andrew Jackson did when he would go in and say, I'm going to take this Indian territory and break all these treaties. And hey, go down there, just be standing by the land office. You know, 9 o'clock, something's going to happen. Be ready and buy some land for me. And he enriched all of his friends and him.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. This is a repeat of that, what we called smash and grab. And it involves Barack Obama. I mean, I'm somebody who has not been a Obama fan as far as his policies and his worldview, but I never really thought that there was going to be much financial corruption in his inner circle. And I was just dead wrong. And smash and grab is very similar. As the name implies, Barack Obama would go in and smash a company or smash an industry, and then a very close friend or a close financial ally, it could be George Soros, it could be Tom Steyer, or it could be his best friend, a guy a lot of people have never heard of named Marty Nesbitt, would come in and buy the company for pennies on the dollar. And the most vivid example, I would say, is probably the University of Phoenix, which is a for-profit school that the Obama administration decided was not serving students well, by their definition. And they said, we're not going to allow GI Bill money, that is money from the Pentagon that allows active duty soldiers and others who've been enlisted, to use that money to attend the University of Phoenix. Well, you can imagine, Glenn, what happened to the stock price of that company. It went from $100 a share down to about $3 a share.
Jeez.
At which point, Glenn, his best friend, Marty Nesbitt, who runs something called the Vistria Fund in Chicago, stepped in and bought the company for pennies on the dollar. At which point, you probably know where this is going next, the Obama administration reversed course and said, you know what, we are now going to allow GI Bill dollars to flow to this company,
thereby,
of course, elevating the valuation again. So it's a very insidious form of crony capitalism and corruption, because you're not only taking something that doesn't belong to you, you're actually destroying other people's businesses. Whether it's the University of Phoenix, they did it to coal companies, they did it to payday lenders, and his friends stepped in and made a lot of money.
What about
through smash and grab?
Did you get into it at all? I remember right at the beginning of the Obama administration, when they took over GM, and then they started picking and choosing car dealerships, and people who had car dealerships forever lost those. Did you get into that at all?
I didn't, but that's a great point to bring up. I mean, this is the problem. We've talked about crony capitalism before, is you give politicians the power to pick winners and losers. And the losers, you know, shock of all shocks, tend to be opponents or non-allies of the politicians. And the winners always seem to be their close friends and allies. And, you know, it's very, very difficult to detect. But, you know, it's like this circle. So what you have is Marty Nesbitt making all of this money through the actions of his best friend, Barack Obama. What is Marty Nesbitt now? He's the chairman of the Obama Foundation. So he is now pouring money into Barack Obama's next enterprise. So it's the ultimate sort of in back scratching. And, you know, this is the sort of insidious stuff that you are going to get with any president when you have them intervening in markets these ways and picking winners and losers.
So this is why I think conspiracies start, because you have exposed both sides in your book. And there will be people that would, you know, friends of mine that are on the right or on the left that will overlook things that, you know, will happen with the Bushes or happen with the Trumps, but they will zero in on Barack Obama. The same thing with the people on the left. They will not listen to anything about Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, and they think it's conspiracy theory because no one is covering both sides.
Right. No, this is a huge point. And the only way we are ever going to get at the root of corruption and cronyism is when we are prepared to call out our own side. The corrupt political class works in a bipartisan manner on one thing, and that is feathering their own nests. You know, there is cooperation on that. There may not be on the budget. There may not be on a whole host of other issues. On that issue, they cooperate. And they are counting on the fact that we have this binary view. Well, you know, I can't call out the guy on my side, because if I do, the other side might gain a seat and we're going to lose. So I've just got to stick with the corrupt guy on my side. And both sides do it.
Peter.
So my challenge to people is, if they're going to talk about corruption, you need to be prepared to call out somebody on your side first. You've done this, Glenn. There are other people doing it, but precious few want to do it. They end up using corruption and cronyism just as a bat to hit the other side with, rather than really trying to change this stuff.
Is anybody doing anything in Congress to stop it? I mean, really?
You know, I don't think there are some reformers that tend to be more junior. The problem you get is the longer the people stay in Washington, D.C., the less bad it appears to them. I had a guy who served in Congress for 8 years who told me, he said, look, let's be very clear. When you first get to Washington, D.C., most people see its, a cesspool. But you stay a few years and then it starts to feel like a hot tub. You know, it's just comfortable. It's you know, you get used to the smell, you get used to the odor, and then you think, oh, this isn't really that bad. So it's, you know, on issues like term limits, which I used to not think were a good idea, I have changed course, because we've got to root out this culture. You've got people on both sides of the aisle shouting at each other, saying this side, if they take over, are going to wreck the country. And then what do? They both retire and they open a lobbying shop together. So there's so much theater related to the partisan difference, but when it comes to the sort of industrial logic business model of Washington, D.C., they're all on the same team.
Peter Schweitzer, the name of the book is Secret Empires, available now, How the American Political Class Hides Corruption and Enriches Family and Friends. Peter, thanks for your hard work. Thanks for exposing it yet again. I appreciate it. God bless.
Thanks, Glenn.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
Glenn Beck Program.
So if you weren't following the news yesterday, you might have heard that Kevin Williamson was fired from The Atlantic. Who is Kevin Williamson? Well, he's a really, really smart libertarian. And he's a guy who is very, very dry in his sense of humor and says things in pointed ways to get you to think. That's his job, get you to think. He was just hired away from the National Review, and he is truly one of our greater minds. And he was hired by The Atlantic. Now, a lot of his friends said, "You're not going to find a happy place over there, Kevin. Let's see how long this lasts." No. They're interested in the other side as long as it's, you know, it's intelligent dialogue. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Media Matters gets involved, and they start to find they start doing their digging on him. And you can always find something on somebody. And they found a podcast that he did where he posed the question, if you believe that abortion is murder, shouldn't we hang the people or give them the death penalty if they've had one or performed one? Because wouldn't we do that for a child if a child was murdered? Why wouldn't we give them the maximum sentence? Now, in that same podcast, he said, now, I don't believe in the death penalty, but I'm just asking the question. That was too much for Media Matters. So they started a campaign, and they didn't let the free market decide. They, Media Matters, is brown shirts or black shirts, whatever side of fascism you would like. They took to the streets, the phone and email, and they started letting The Atlantic know, you've got a Nazi in your midst.
And we should be clear. The comments made by Kevin Williamson do not cross any line of Media Matters. There is no line of Media Matters. The only line of Media Matters is opportunity. And they saw an opportunity with Kevin Williamson to flex their muscle and try to get new donations and gain more power and scare conservatives and scare mainstream media from hiring conservatives. They are not offended in the least by anything that Kevin Williamson has ever written.
Nope.
They don't care at all. They only care about their own power and their own money. Period. They are nothing but an organization dedicated to destruction. And they see Kevin Williamson's comment. You know, look, obviously they're a liberal organization. They oppose the pro-life movement. But there's no difference for them between what Kevin Williamson said about entertaining the potential death penalty for people who get the abortions and someone who says you shouldn't be able to abort someone 9 seconds before birth. There's no room between those two comments for Media Matters. They don't care at all. They just know they can't get people fired for saying you shouldn't be able to abort people 9 seconds before birth. And that's all they care about is destruction. They're a joke. I mean, and they're, you know, look, they'll say anything, they'll do anything. They've had to retract stories about me in the past. This is an organization that doesn't care. They are just looking to try to perform a character assassination over anyone who's on the right. So the idea that this comment is like really out of line for them, they don't care about the comment. That's not the business they're in. They're in a business of opportunistic destruction.
So here's the thing. You either have balls or you don't. I've had people work for me. Amy Holmes, who's in our studio here in a few minutes. Amy Holmes has worked for me. She believes in abortion. She was open about her belief on abortion. She was consistent on her belief on abortion. And I am pro-life. Okay, we can't work with each other? Of course we can. We can't be on the same platform? Of course we can. Challenge. Give me the intellectual exercise that we need every day. Challenge me. But don't do it in a bomb-throwing way. Be consistent and be educated on whatever it is you're talking about. Don't be an idiot. That's important. Now, Kevin Williamson is anything but an idiot. And he was very clear that this was a mental exercise. Now, let me ask you this. Kevin Williamson poses a question. If you believe it's murder, shouldn't we then prosecute those who murdered that child? Good question. Some mental gymnastics. Am I consistent? What do I really believe? Why not? Or why? Those are all things that the average person should be thinking. But he's saying, if you actually believe this is murder, and these people who are the doctors have blood on their hands, should they be prosecuted? And if not, why? And he gets fired from The Atlantic. But I want to play some audio from somebody who said almost the same thing, except this is not in any way, shape, or form something that you should be executed for. Listen to Roseanne Barr.
Of course, that the guilty must be punished, and that we can no longer, you know, let our children see their guilty leaders getting away with murder, because it teaches children that, you know, they don't have to have any morals, and as long as they have guns and are bullies, that they'll win. And I don't think that's a good message. I do say that I am for the return of the guillotine, and that is for the worst of the worst of the guilty. I first would allow the guilty bankers to pay, you know, the ability to pay back anything over $100 million personal wealth, because I believe in a maximum wage of $100 million. And if they're unable to live on that amount, then they should, you know, go to the re-education camps. And if that doesn't help, then be beheaded.
Now, nowhere on Russian TV did she go, or any time else, did she go on to say, oh, I was just a parody bit. Oh, I was just trying to make people think. And she's rewarded with an ABC show. Now, how does this work? I'm just trying to find the consistency here. They're both talking about execution. They're both talking about execution that's for something that is controversial yet legal. One, people actually die, and people have actually caused the death of another individual. The other is corruption. Both bad, one worse. Murder.
And really what Kevin's doing there is totally different than what Roseanne is doing. Roseanne is advocating an execution for people who made money in some way she finds to be corrupt.
Yeah, well, right? Also, well, that and re-education camps.
And re-education camps, right. Yeah. But execution.
Mm-hmm.
And that is her advocating for a specific thing. What it seems like Kevin Williamson was doing, from the parts that I've heard from his commentary, is exploring the idea, is when we say abortion is murder, is it what we mean, or is it a rhetorical device?
Mm-hmm.
Right? For example, the NRA is a terrorist organization, is something the left says often, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they actually believed the NRA is a terrorist organization, the answer to that question is not to restrict future purchases from 18 to 20-year-olds of one type of weapon. Right? Like, you wouldn't say, hey, ISIS, they're a terrorist organization, we should restrict their purchases of AR-15s for ISIS members between 18 and 20. Right? Like, you would say, we need to do something much more dramatic than that, right? Because in reality, what that is a rhetorical device. They're saying it's a terrorist organization, and there are dopes on Twitter who believe it, but in reality, the left doesn't actually believe the NRA is a terrorist organization. They really want power of guns, right? And they think this is a way to make that happen. He's exploring, Kevin, I think, is saying, like, do we actually believe this? And that's a tough conversation. It's a conversation and I believe, as Kevin has said since, it's not really a great conversation to have on Twitter, right? It's not the best venue for that type of conversation. And it's interesting kind of look at that. And say, and take a step back and say, what do we accept? Because when you're looking to really challenge someone, we can all sit here and say the same basic arguments over and over and over again. How long have we been talking about this? We've been talking about this, Glenn, going back probably since the formation of this program, to a lot of talk radio has the same conversations over and over and over again. You need to do what thing? You need to do different things. We've talked about this intellectual dark web over the past few months, which is a step into areas, I think, that are really uncomfortable for polite discourse. Now, it's not to say that you're throwing bombs or insulting people.
No, have intelligent.
Into uncomfortable areas That is something we should all be cheering on as a society, because you know what? We might go into an uncomfortable area and say, you know what? I'm glad that's uncomfortable. We should keep that uncomfortable, because that doesn't work for me. That's not a good place for us to go. But to act as if you can't have those conversations, it is ridiculous. If you can't have those conversations, how do you advance? How do you challenge a long-held belief? You know, for a while, a long-held belief was black people should be slaves, okay? And it was really uncomfortable for people like Benjamin Franklin to have the conversation, you know what, I don't think black people should be slaves. It was a thing that had happened for how many years? You know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, all of history, basically, people had slaves. It was not a questioned part of society, largely. But people like Franklin and many others took that uncomfortable step to say, hey, maybe we're the worst people on earth for doing this.
So there's an interesting piece of history. Sam Houston, the governor of Texas, he was a senator of Texas first. He was actually kicked out of the Senate. He and Davy Crockett and a lot of them, because he disagreed with slavery. Sam Houston, you know, evil racist Texas, Sam Houston. Sam Houston was on the floor of the Senate, and they were arguing that preachers have no place in politics. The Democrats, the Southern Democrats, they have no place in politics. Their voice is in the church. There is a separation of church and state. And that's when Charles Sumner got up about 1857, and he got up and he said, let me address this. And Sam Houston got up and said, Charles, sit down. I got this one. And he gave one of the most rip-roaring speeches about freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion, and freedom of thought. Here's two Southern senators standing up and saying, no, I think you misunderstand. Just because you're a preacher doesn't mean you lose your right to free thought, free expression, freedom of your own voice. Nobody ever loses that. Now, the left will say today that, well, no, nobody's going to jail. No, what were they doing? They were trying to silence people. Whenever you are with someone and they say, you know what, we need to silence that person, you're in the wrong crowd. I don't care what side they're on. I don't care who they are. But if they are trying to silence people, you're in the wrong crowd, and get out of there quickly.
Glenn Beck.
You know, we're just talking about Roseanne and what she said about giving bankers the guillotine. They got rich on Wall Street. She was serious about that. She was rewarded with an ABC show. But she's also a massive conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, well, she holds on to the ABC show despite very recently, because the clip we played, I think, was from 2011. Mm-hmm. This is very recently talked about her support for Donald Trump. And you might say, well, that's great. I mean, you know, he had passed that tax plan. That's not why she's supporting Donald Trump. She's supporting Donald Trump because of her belief in a series of very strange conspiracy theories that she believes Donald Trump is involved in, which Donald Trump does not say he's involved in at all.
If I'm not mistaken, she's back to the pizza.
It's basically Pizzagate. They barely even remixed the conspiracy
theory.
Right?
It's not Pizzagate. It's another place.
Yeah, it's called The Storm. The conspiracy theory is called The Storm. It was born on 4chan. We should go through some of the details of it. Because
it's crazy. She is not a stable individual.
No.
And she's fine. ABC. I mean, imagine giving Alex Jones an ABC show.
Fair point. They don't even want him to be interviewed by Megyn Kelly.
Right. No interviews done. They'll put her on ABC.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.